Chapel Hill and Carrboro. This is WILP's Wake Up Call. WILP being the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. We're coming to you on WCOMLP, your Chapel Hill and Carrboro local radio station. Today we have a guest, Bob Hall, who is the director of Democracy North Carolina. I think we all know we need as much democracy as we can get in North Carolina, and they're working for that. So maybe Bob can tell us a little bit about Democracy North Carolina and what you are doing to help us get this democracy we desperately need.
Well, good morning. It's good to be here. Democracy North Carolina, we actually used to have the office right down the block here from in Carrboro for many years, and now we're over in Durham. Basically, our mission is to bring more people into the political system and to push back the money, the special interest influence that has a grip on the political system. So we want to empower ordinary people to have their voice heard in politics, because politics affects everything we do. The schools, you know, the taxes we pay, the roads we drive on, the quality of the food we eat, the job, the work environment, everything is affected by political decisions. So that's our mission, is to bring more people to bring more people in. And one of the big victories we've had recently was a same-day registration. That was a campaign we waged with a great coalition of folks for four or five years. And it had a big impact in 2008, bringing more people in.
And that, I guess,
and
it did.
We're working a lot on the campaign finance reform side as well to kind of push back the power of money.
And I guess it's heartening, in spite of how difficult it is, that you have had some successes. I think, was it just a few years ago that three of the Council of State positions?
We started in the public financing option, giving candidates a different way to run for office other than have to go out and raise lots of money from private interest, who then often come back to you and say, you know, we need a favor. And with judges is where we started, because that's a particularly awkward, you know, can you imagine? Or you as a person going into a courtroom and you got the judge up there and you got the two attorneys, and now which attorney gave them $1,000?
Yeah.
Well, that's hard. Over time, you know that that's got to have some kind of impact. And so even in perception of the public, it's a bad way to run our politics. If we're going to elect judges, then we ought to give them a different way to run for office, and with a different campaign financing structure. So that was, I think we won that in 2002, and it
I've
went into place in 2004.
That,
we're very much into the, you know, appreciate that, that you got to kind of go one step at a time.
Yeah.
And just incrementally build.
Yeah.
And we really like to form coalitions with groups, because I think people need to know that their energy can make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Often people think government is so far away, or that their vote doesn't make a difference, or their letter to a congressman or a state legislator doesn't make a difference, or their call. But it actually does. When those things are added up, even now, you know, legislators tell us if they get 15 letters or 100 emails on a topic, or 70 emails, and you sort of, there's a pecking order of what's most influential to them. Certainly a personal visit is tops, and then a personal handwritten letter.
Really?
Handwritten letter. I mean, they get so many of these emails that are, you know, kind of mass produced by groups that are saying, you know, click on this box and send the email.
Yeah.
They've gotten a little bit inoculated from the power of that, although it still has an impact. But telephone calls, and so on. So, but I mean, it really does add up and make some difference. Right now, in the General Assembly, for example, they're dealing with this budget and how to balance the budget, and they're freaked out about adding any revenue. And if they need the public to tell them, we want a better quality government. We need the quality of government that we've had, at least. We don't want to go backwards. So we would rather see, particularly on the higher income, let's have a surcharge, a two-year surcharge on the income tax of the most wealthy. Or let's take out some of the loopholes that are in our tax code now. let's produce a couple extra $1 billion a year so we don't have to have these draconian cuts that they're talking about. Mm-hmm. But that can only happen if lots and lots of people mobilize, talk to their legislators, go down there, just whatever, by any means necessary, you know, whether it's an email or a phone call. And they're actually quite accessible. I go down to Raleigh quite a bit. And you can go up and talk to these legislators in Raleigh. So,
Well, that's so encouraging, and I wish that message got out in every school as part of civics or something. You know,
we have a bill right now. I tell you, you're bringing that up. It's sort of the next step with the same day registration. Why not allow kids that are in the 10th grade when they're taking civics, generally 16, 17 year olds. Why not let them go ahead and pre-register to vote right then?
Yes.
Or when they go to the DMV and get their driver's license first time around, 16 years old, let them go ahead and not, you know, fill out the form. They're just telling the person on the other side of the desk, yeah, because they ask everybody if they're 18 or above, do you want to register?
Mm-hmm.
And let them go ahead and do it then, and we'll get more people on the rolls. And it does show, the data does show that once young people are registered, they tend to vote in a little bit better proportion. It's still less than their parents, but the biggest problem is getting them registered.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, this is something, I don't know how many people, you know, will say, or I hear so often, oh, you know, I don't care about politics, and so, you know, they're above the fray, and oh, they're all crooked, or, you know, what's the point? It doesn't do any good. And I just think we over and over and over again, you know, I'll say, you know, politics is not politicians. It affects just what you said. Every aspect, you know, are your kids going to be able to get a low-cost loan for college?
Right.
You know, what's happening with your schools? What's happening with our air, our water? That's all
affected by politics.
And we, you know, it's not
and
like...
And in a democracy, we still do have this basic democracy of the power of the vote.
Yes.
At come election time, my vote's as powerful as the banker or billionaire, one by one.
Yeah.
It is the great leveler, the great equalizer that we still have. And we've got to use that tool.
That's right. I don't know what the percentage is of how few people vote. I think it was better in this last election.
Yeah, yeah.
But something...
We had a record in North Carolina.
Was it a little over half or something?
Well, it depends on, you know, if you look at the number who are registered, it was 70%. The number of folks who are registered, 70% of them actually voted in 2008, which is the highest we've had in over 100 years.
Really?
Yeah.
100?
Yeah.
Wow.
But if you look at it in terms of the eligible, the voting age population, so that would include people who are not registered who could, then it drops down more like the 61%, something like that. So there's, you know, there's still well over a million of people who could be voting who are not.
Who are letting those who vote make the decisions for them.
Yeah.
And but I think so much in our media or whatever does encourage people to feel, you know, they don't have any power.
Yeah.
I mean, there just seems to be a whole cultural thing about...
Well, it's, you know, it's interesting because we also kind of feed into that sometimes by saying that here's a crooked politician, or here's how special interests are buying this result in
That's
government.
True. Yeah.
And it sort of promotes the cynicism, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
But I really fear that the people who are too idealistic about how government works, they're the ones who become too cynical right away.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's not you can't be too ideal. I mean, this is a messy
process. That's a good point.
And people will get, we got some bad apples here all the time. And we got to keep weeding them out, keep holding them up to standards, and keep pushing. Mm-hmm. One by one. We just got to make progress.
Well, so not to feed into encouraging cynicism, but there is a hot scandal, you know, going on right now with Mary Easley. And I think the governor, too, is being investigated. Isn't
it?
Yeah. And I remember in the past year with that trip that she took to Russia with her sister and a trooper and reading about it. And it just was shocking to me that she would come from a state as poor as North Carolina is and feel it was okay to have limousines waiting all night to eat in the best restaurants. How was that promoting North Carolina's art or business or anything? It was sort of like the elites have come, and Russia's a poor country, except for its elites, of course. So the elites go with the elites, and it really made me feel like Marie Antoinette, that she was like Marie Antoinette, let the peasants eat cake. But nothing happened. That whole thing dropped.
Well, yeah, it was kind of a blip. I mean, it happened for a while, but there was this sort of sense of entitlement, or you got this air that these folks believe that this, well, what's up with that? Of course I could go over, of course I could do this.
I'm the governor's wife, I'm representing the state, and I'm special.
The job then she got at NC State, and the which it was very shaky to begin with, and they did some exposure of it, but got the big promotion, and it seemed like they were struggling to put a job description behind the fact that they've given her this 88% wage increase up to whatever, $170,000 a year, I believe. It's now a five-year contract, $170,000 a year.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
What is she doing?
Uniquely qualified, I think, is how
she's
she put
an executive in residence or something.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I in some ways I wish the media had pushed that story at that time to get behind what was going on.
Yes.
How did she get that position? Now they come back around and kind of put out their chest. Oh yeah, we've discovered the real problem here, and aren't we wonderful? And it's this guy McQueen Campbell and his flying the governor around, and he got this position in the trustee, and now he's the chair of the board of blah blah blah. I'm glad it's all coming out.
Yeah.
I wish it had come out earlier.
Well, exactly. That's what one of my daughters said to me. You know, why now? That it was all out before. People, you could see what was going on, and then it just was dropped. Of course, I think I misspoke earlier and called Easley our governor. He is our former governor. Is that part of where they feel emboldened to push back now?
But media, there is a bit of dogged determination by the News and Observer to get Easley on wrongdoing, because they're very upset, and the editor wrote columns about how mad they were at Easley for not giving up the emails and other documents that they had requested. He was a very closed down, even though he'd been the attorney general and been in charge of our open records laws and so on. He, in his office, and in the way he did business, was very closed, and access to the records was very difficult, and he made it difficult.
Mm.
And the media got more and more angry. In the last year of his administration, the News Observer in particular got just basically pissed off at him.
Yeah.
And now it's payback time.
Well, you know, it's like the News and Observer, sadly, I guess like most papers in the country, is not the paper it once was for quite a long time. But I was heartened that at least there's some investigative reporting going on.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, this is what a newspaper is supposed to do. But I just wondered.
Well, they're supposed to do that, but they're also supposed to just cover the routine business of state government.
Yes.
So that people are aware of when these problems come up. And they're not so surprised by them and say, nor are they going to be in a position to always, they like it when they get the gotcha moment, you know, here, now we gotcha. But I would also like to see them cover some of the basics of things that are going on. These bills that pass and become state law, and then 3 years later, they find out that what it's leading to is some huge scandal.
Mm-hmm.
And well, why didn't we catch it when they were debate about it? And we've seen it in the cable, how they're going to allow cable service in communities, for example, that these kind of things that happen, or deregulation of the telephone system, or a deregulation of environmental. So many things that are going on where they're just nicking away at the government regulation for the protection of the public. And then when the public is left out there, here's the scandal.
Yeah, but I guess then they probably feel that's not as juicy a scandal. But they're not doing the job that they should be doing, and then some of that nitty gritty stuff that affects our lives, but that is not being paid attention to until it is like the gotcha moment.
Yeah.
Are we due for a station break? I think so. This, again, is Wilp's Wake Up Call. I'm Lori Hoyt, and Dick Paddock, our technical engineer, is here. And our guest is Bob Hall, director of Democracy North Carolina, and that's exactly what we're talking about: is how do we get more improve democracy in this state? Our underwriter is the Internationalist Bookstore on 405 West Franklin Street. Excuse me, internationalistbooks.org, and our website for the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, WILF, is trianglewilf.org. And with WILF, get that P in there, W-I-L-P-F. I'd be saying WILF around the house, and my kids thought I was saying woof. So I want to be really clear, because we have a lot of wonderful things on our website that you would really want to look up and see the wonderful things we're doing. And you can click on to all our previous radio programs, and we have some of the most interesting guests you're going to hear anywhere in North Carolina. And we have one of the best today with us, Bob Hall, who's a longtime activist. I've seen you around for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just getting old.
We both are.
Yeah, it's fun.
It is fun.
Yeah. No, it's great.
Yeah, both.
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, we're glad to have you. So to pick up what we're talking about, we've been just talking about the News and Observer doing some real investigative reporting on the Easleys. But unfortunately, not doing it on a lot of things that the public really needs to know so that they know what's going on and hopefully get to know it before it's like a real scandal or a real shock.
I was interested because the News and Observer had this take on Easley as being not the kind of good old boy politician, a break from the past. And there would be columns about that over and over again. But lo and behold, it does turn out that he is very much of a good old boy kind of politician. He's not a glad hander. He doesn't go out to crowds. He hates that part of it. But there is a cronyism about his style that is coming out now. And it has to do with the way he raised money, political money, to get in office. And then rewards for those folks to get into on appointed positions. And they're not just honorary positions. These are the people that are making decisions about protecting our coast or the environmental management or all the different agencies that we have, the health reform, the health care commission. All of them are appointed positions. Ordinary citizens, I mean, we have an amazing system where ordinary citizens serve on policy making boards, and some of them are required to have representation from the different stakeholders, and then it's sort of like a jury where they figure out what is the best policy for the good of the people. Mm-hmm. But if you stack it up with people that are very wealthy or mm-hmm. people that only have one perspective, or, you know, they're too oriented to only the business or mm-hmm. the profit or the bottom line, mm-hmm. then you get a skewed outcome. And that's what we have on too many of our commissions.
Mm-hmm.
The Board of Transportation, you know, is sort of notorious as being the place where big-time political mm-hmm. fundraisers and donors would get appointed to that position. And Easley was actually exactly like, whether it was Democrat, you know, Jim Hunt did it, Jim Martin did it, Democrat, Republican, they both put their top fundraisers, their top political givers mm-hmm. right on that board. And then that board had tremendous power. It was like a feudal system where the state was divided into these 13 regions, and each one of the Board of Transportation members basically had veto power over what road was built or what interchange got improved or, you know, whatever. They had a slush fund even that they could help pave extra roads with this extra $1 million or whatever. Now Purdue is trying to change a lot of that and has said she's going to mm-hmm. remove the power of the board members from having control over individual road-making decisions, individual contracts. and make it a policy-making board. So they just basically look to the long term. How much should we allocate for repair? How much should we allocate for mass transit? How much should we do for this? Sort of thinking long term and in a policy way, and not micromanaging the board itself.
Well, that's encouraging.
That is, yeah. I mean, that came out of the scandal, just kind of a recurring scandal that we've had every 10 years or so in the Department of Transportation.
So it's reminding me of, you know, Reverend Barber with the HK on J March we have each year, and the last one saying, you know, not to take this out on the backs of the poor.
Right.
The shortage, with, you know, because they always do seem to find money for things that are not that important. There's always seems to be money for things like that, but then it comes to education or it comes to health care, you know, just so many things that are essential.
And that's
when they're crying poor. That's why I was thinking we call ourselves a poor state, but I don't know.
There's a lot of money.
Sloshing around there.
We did a study called Highway Robbery a few years back and looked at the Board of Transportation and all the makeup of that and how those individual board members made their decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually talked to the executives in the Department of Transportation and we got this one retired man who had been the head of the highway division for years and years, and he said that there is probably about 10% of the money is political patronage. 10% of the spending. Now that was
10% of a huge piece of money.
10% of $3 billion at this point. That's $300 million every year. Every year that is being spent on building roads that may not be need to be built for another 15 years, but they go ahead and put them up on the line because they know that there's somebody's development is down the road that wants to get or there's a blank, you know, it's just empty property, but they own it, so it's their crony friend and they want to help them out and blah blah blah, and roads, you know, lead to sprawl and development.
Wow. And then, of course, it's so hard to find any money for public transit.
Right.
I mean, and then it's
right.
always like, oh, my God, it's going to cost so much, or increasing health care coverage for people. And I guess we've just got to keep what you said, just keep chipping away. At
using all the powers that we have.
Well, this is encouraging that with our new governor, then that maybe this scandal is pushing her to move quicker than maybe she would have on this transparency. And
well, yeah, I think, and it's a result of the public paying attention and being outraged and letting that be known that they are cautious. They got to be aware that people are looking over their shoulder. That we do have to stay vigilant and make them a little nervous. That so that they do the right thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I think some of them are well-intended and they get preoccupied with other things and they fall into this trap of beginning to feel privileged, beginning to feel like the ends justify the means so that they can get away, you know, cutting corners here or getting a favor there or helping somebody out because they know that they need their help later on. And it's a bad system, and sometimes it's good people in a bad system that are getting trapped and getting spoiled and ruined.
Well, yeah, because that you can look at that from North Carolina to the whole thing with Wall Street. You know, this sense of privilege, a sense of entitlement, and that when you sort of get removed from the nitty gritty of most people's lives. And you get into that position of power, that after a while I can see where, you know, it's like the status quo becomes what you think should be, and you feel that entitlement. Like a lot of these people do not feel they were doing wrong. Oh, it's just part of the system, you know. We just thought it was okay, you know, and And it is a much more subtle corruption than actual taking, say, a bribe and somebody handing you. It's a very subtle corruption that I can see. You know, I can see myself thinking, oh, well, you know, they're taking me out to dinner. Oh, they're going to give me a plane ride someplace. Oh, how nice, you know.
Really?
But it really does get, I remember one time when somebody was saying how the whole system is really like legalized blackmail, you know, where money does get that power and get that voice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's one of the reasons why we go to the public financing route is that you do have to have money to run a campaign.
Yes,
a politician does have to have money. They got to get the word out. So as the public, we can't be outraged when they go out and raise money.
No.
What are you thinking? We've got to have some method. So a public financing program gives them an alternative, gives them an option. And if you structure it right, you can drive them toward voters and making relationships with small donors, $10, $20 donors. And if they can get enough of those to give them the qualifying contributions, then they get access to a public fund.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Chapel Hill is going to start a program this election.
Yeah.
They'll have a public financing for the first time, and it'll mean that candidates can opt in. It's voluntary. They don't have to do it. But it does mean that they can go out and get at least 75 registered voters to give them small donations. And if they do that and agree to other conditions, then they can get a grant of $3,000 to run their council race. So that's going to be a good experiment. A lot of people are going to be watching that. But it means that your $5 contribution to that candidate is very important, because you're empowering a candidate to get access to a lot more money. You're boosting, you're leveraging their candidate into something very meaningful.
Well, I hope all of our listeners are paying attention to that. I'd forgotten about that, too, with all the things that go on. It's just so easy to sort of drop certain important pieces of information. So we better get out there and send our $5 or $10.
Celebrate our successes and use them.
Yes, yes. And not give way to cynicism and despair. Because I guess Obama, even though he did opt out from the public financing, he did base his campaign a lot on these small donations.
Yeah, the presidential public financing program is really obsolete. It's like from the 1970s. It's got to be updated.
So we've got to update that, but he did, and the emphasis was so much on people's participation, and I think that was the first time in a long time that you felt this people's sense of ownership and participation and wanting to be involved, and I thought that was a heartening
thing. It was, and he needed it. I mean, it was, black power, it was green power. If he hadn't had all that money, I'm afraid he would not have gotten as far as he did. So money is always important.
So I guess I was going to ask you, and I didn't yet, like the greater scandal with Mary Easley, is there any greater significance? In a way, we're talking about that, but do you want to say any more about that?
Well, I think that it is this coziness and cronyism that happens that I think that we do have to give the political system a different approach to the political system that puts the public in the center of it and not the private kind of wealthy. It's not a system for the wealthy, it's a system for us.
Well, we're getting close to closing, and I think that is a good thought to leave with our listeners. This is Wilp's Wake Up Call, and we've been talking to Bob Hall from Democracy North Carolina, and all of us hopefully are working together to get North Carolina Chapel Hill with this next publicly financed election, hopefully, and to start us taking, we ordinary people, taking ownership and participation in what's going to happen.
Voter-owned elections.
Voter-owned elections, yes.
All right.
Okay.